Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
どこにいるのかな。見えない。
あ、こんなところ。
I miss you. What's good, internet? It is Austin Walker. It is October 14th, 2016. Joining me, co-host Patrick Klepek. How you doing?
I'm here.
You're here.
Please excuse me if I cough into the mic. Cough, cough. Cough, cough, cough.
I got big news from the bunker.
What? What's the news?
I got a table. There's a table in here. So my computer is on a table today, making big moves, big plays. This is esports right here.
Let no one say that when we went to Vice, we didn't become big time.
We got a table.
We got a table.
My understanding is this table belongs in another room, and the person who normally uses the table is just out today. So I'm getting to use this table.
Stop it. Don't give the... You bury the lead, Austin. You don't have to. You don't go into that much detail
about it. There's also the fact that, like, we came down here today and we got into this nice rhythm because we figured out a system that worked. And then what happened was our audio computer, Mitch, who is the audio engineer here, was I think that's Mitch's proper title. I can't hear him because I'm for the reason I'm about to explain. The computer that Mitch uses upgraded to El Capitan, which meant that the system that we had set up broke. Is that what it's called? Is it really OS X El Capitan? Did they really?
Yeah, they've
name
been
it that?
Naming it after like California landmarks. Yeah, that happened. I recorded a separate podcast, Match 3, over at the Cards Against Humanity office in Chicago, and that everything got broke there too with a Mac upgrade, where there are certain podcast setups for advanced equipment that just broke over USB.
Cool.
Yeah.
So that's basically what happened. Like, normally what we do is we use, we have my audio going into a computer. We have Patrick's audio being patched into my headphones through the soundboard.
Very
For whatever
technical.
Reason, that fell apart. And so then it was like, all right, well, Mitch is going to try to get that working. While he's doing that, I'm going to run out and try to get my old, like, podcasting mic set up. And I lost the cable. So then I was like, okay, what's my third option? It was going to be, like, a little Zoom handheld USB, not USB, but just, like, it's kind of a handheld microphone. And I was just going to record myself into a microphone for an hour while I had you on Skype in my earbuds. Thankfully, we're a little bit better than that, but I still can't hear Mitch. So if Mitch is yelling at me, people keep coming in and looking at this room as if they have it booked, but I definitely have it booked. Podcast Bunker, it is happening October 14th.
Oh my god, we have our shit together.
We have it together. We're getting really close. The funny thing is, like, I actually, if you listen back to the first episode this week, I was like, we have a big announcement coming. And then I got to be like Tuesday, and I was like, we gotta push that fucking announcement back.
That fell apart real quick. I guess that's why you don't tease announcements,
you just
announce them.
Yeah, this is why you do the Beyonce. This is why you do the like last second boom. Here it is. Oof, pal, surprise. But instead, what we did was, hey, something's coming. And then it turned out the only thing I had that came this week was this cool table that I get for a little bit.
Well, I mean, personally speaking, that's a pretty big deal.
I have water in front of me on a table. The last 3 weeks, I've just had, like, water or coffee on the floor next to me because there's been nowhere to put it. So this is a big upgrade as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I don't think you should... You're underselling how good things are getting for us and for this podcast that... We're going to be close to a month now with no name, and we're no progress on that name.
Well, the thing is, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Uh-huh. Okay.
We've made some progress on the name.
It's true. I mean, there's a document that we looked at once and then have not looked at again. That's progress.
That's
more than we had before.
That's
more than we had
before. If you had to file a report, if Joel, our publisher, or CL, who is like head of content or something here, I was like, what sort of progress
content,
have you made?
Ding.
Yeah, there it is. What sort of progress have you made on naming the podcast? We'd be like, well, we made a document and we went over a list and we'd like give the number of names we went over in the dozens, so it sounded like we did a lot of hard work and thinking.
Okay.
You know,
you're making me feel better about it.
Listen, it's my job to spin stuff so that it's clear that we're doing our jobs well instead of just, like, doing them to the best of our ability. Like, that's the – I know we're doing to the best of our ability. I trust us. I believe in you and in myself and everyone else here. What I need to do is go – when I report up to executives, I make it seem like we're not just doing our best. We're doing well. You know? Like, that's the – that's what an editor-in-chief has to do.
I feel better already. I feel like I'm – now I feel like I'm killing it. So that's good. Thank you, Austin.
So you're killing it. What else have you been doing this week in games?
I've been playing a little bit more Gears of War 4. I've been, you know, out of town. We talked about that on Monday. And then the subsequent days has been me recovering from a cold and recovering from being out of town for a couple days. Just mostly just very, very sleepy. But I played a little bit more Gears of War 4. And what's interesting about the game, I don't have any really sort of like substantial thoughts on the campaign or anything like that. But it's more that so I'm playing Gears of War 4 on a PC. And, you know, they have this new Play Anywhere initiative where if you buy it, Microsoft published games on the PC, you also get access to them on Xbox or vice versa. And it's absolutely a game you should play on the PC if you have the option to, because it looks absolutely gorgeous. And it's one of the first times where I have felt as though, because it's a Microsoft published game, that it was a game made on the PC and ported to the Xbox. Now, I can't like speak to their workflow or how this game was developed. You know, I'm mostly just speaking of, it makes me wonder, in a sort of Scorpio world, you know, that we'll be entering to in 2017, like, when you play this game on a PC, it feels like you're playing what games are probably going to be like on the Scorpio, because you're getting, you know, sort of 1080p. I mean, they're saying they're 4K, but, you know, you're getting 1080p, 60 frames a second. And it just makes me wonder how that strata is going to work a year from now in my head of, you know, Gears of War 5 is going to happen. It'll be a game that is both on, not both, there'll be three platforms, you know, it'll be on PC, it'll be on Scorpio, it'll be on Xbox One. And in my head, I just wonder how all of that works out. I mean, it makes me think, does PC become ultra settings? Scorpio is like high settings.
Right.
And the Xbox One is medium settings. Like, if I'm to use the analogy of the PC.
I'm kind of okay with that, though. Or, like, it's almost like a softer version of the cross-generation game, right? Where, like, going from PS2 to Xbox 360, or going from Xbox 360 to Xbox One, where something at the borderline would cross over and be like, oh yeah, Gun came out on both the last platform and on this platform.
Gun.
Yeah, deep cuts.
Gun.
I know.
That was a video game.
This is where my head is. Yeah, that was a video game-ass video game. Like, that is a game that, like, was not good on the last generation of consoles, but like, oh hey, you could go play it if you were desperate to play that cowboy game. And if that's what it is with Gears, where it's like, hey, like, an Xbox One is like an affordable price in a year or two from now. I really love Gears of War. I'm not looking at, this isn't the thing I do. I don't, you know, play the 10 games a year. I don't play 20 games a year. I don't play a game a month. Like, I'm just, all I do is play Gears with my friends on the weekends. Yeah, buy an Xbox One and, like, play it at medium settings, and you'll have probably a good enough time. And that's kind of, I'm kind of okay with that. Like, I've always been more interested in that sort of blended, slow progression towards, like, higher graphics or whatever. The thing for me ends up being, what's that mean for Gears 5 in terms of gameplay design?
Right.
Right? Like, where are the things that Scorpio can allow you to do? Maybe that's unfair. Maybe I am even interested in like, graphical effects. Because when I think about the first Gears, I remember seeing the first video of the first Gears from that E3 where it demoed, and just being like, this is incredible. Like,
yeah.
Obviously, we look back now, and like, I think maybe some of the art design can be a little off-putting. Like, those dudes are just all muscle everything in a way that's like, whoa, this is grotesque. But at the time, it looked like...
It was striking. Like, you know, however we feel about it, you know, I think it's aged poorly, but it was certainly striking at the time. And I think it's one of the last few sort of holy shit moments in sort of like visual fidelity. You know, that's been something that we've just sort of lost as fidelity has kind of like squished together in a small measure of progress, which is probably just the way things are going forward. You know, the quantum leaps we get are in terms of presentation, like virtual reality or augmented reality. It's, I think we are, you know, I guess I won't, you know, count my eggs before they hatch, but it would surprise me if we're ever going to see again sort of that quantum leap that, you know, we expected because of what was changing between, you know, 8-bit, 16-bit, 16-bit, 32-bit, and sort of that sort of linear progression that got so exponentially high. I just don't think it happens anymore. And that's what makes me so curious. It's just what Gears has gotten had me thinking about what those games are going to look like, how they're going to present those games, because, I mean, clearly you're going to show the game with the best foot forward, but that's not that may not be the version that most people end up playing, right? So the PC and Scorpio versions may look incredible, and the Xbox One version may look fine, but that's not the one that's going to be in the trailers. That's not the one that's in the commercials. That's not the one that's going to be at E3, and I just wonder how they handle that.
And all that ends up being extra weird now in the world in which there is a suit against Hello Games in the UK.
Right.
Right? Like, because of false advertising or whatever. And that's like such a... We are moving through treacherous ground, and I don't know where to stand. Like, I don't know what my feelings are about that quite yet. Like, I need to see more test cases to really, like, eke out what it is that I feel. But going back really briefly, like, the thing that does bug me a little bit is the notion that you could have something that you could theoretically have a feature, whether that feature was gameplay mechanics, whether it was, you know, character design, like the it might be graphical, on a Scorpio or on a PC that then doesn't make it back into the Gears of War on Xbox One. Like, that would be, or, you know, think about something like Hitman Blood Money, when that came out and it had that great New Orleans level where it was just like a billion people. Like, you could only do that on Xbox 360 and PS3 and PC. I don't know if it actually came out to PS3. I can't recall. But, like, that was like, oh, this is in some sense just a graphical feature because it's just a lot of people on screen. But that affected the way that the experience of playing that level was, right? Like, even going to something like Mafia 3, which I really love, but, like, there's a Mardi Gras sequence in the beginning of that game that, like, does not have many people in it. It's, like, kind of, you're on, like, the kind of the alleyways outside of the main Mardi Gras stretch, but, like, it's nowhere near as, like, populated as that Blood Money level is, and so it doesn't have the same like deep, almost like overwhelming effect. And so it's one of those things where I wonder if Mafia 3 had come out only on high-end PCs, could they have put more people in that space? But because it had to come out on Xbox One and on PS4, they couldn't. Like, is that, it's complete speculation, but that's one of those exact examples of, like, what higher power can do to transform the gameplay experience, you know?
Have you discovered anything else interesting in Mafia as you've been working your way through it?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm definitely on board with what probably the bulk of people feel about that game at this point, which is, well, maybe that's not true. I think a lot of people think it's another open world game with too much bullshit and not enough focus on the story. And I kind of enjoy some of the quote-unquote bullshit. You know, the basic structure of that game is that there are all these different districts, and each one is held by kind of a lieutenant in the mob structure and the mafia structure. And under that lieutenant is two other people, each of which who control a racket. So, like, one guy controls the moonshine brewery, and one person controls the smuggling in of casino equipment. And then under that person, there are more people who are need to be taken out. And basically, you need to, like, wound the racket enough that you kind of bring the targets out, and then take out the two lower targets, and then go after the bigger target. And that is really repetitive, and I've seen some comparisons to Assassin's Creed 1. I think if you actually compared them one-to-one, you would see that there are actually way more activities in this than in Assassin's Creed 1.
Right.
And I think that they fundamentally feel really good, like the combat in Mafia 3. They have lots of, I don't know if it's a procedural animation system, or if it's just there are lots and lots and lots of animations for combat. But there's lots of, like, shooting someone near a wall, and then they, like, clutch onto the wall as they fall down. Or, like, when you get hit, you stop in your tracks. There's lots of, like, everything feels heavy and weighty, and not just in a way that feels, like, quote-unquote realistic. It feels absurd sometimes in the way of, like, 1960s and 70s pulp film, right? Like, everyone overacts a little bit when they get shot, and that's really good. Like, it works. And the same thing with the cars. I put on the simulated driving system in that there's, like, kind of an arcade mode and a simulation mode. And with the simulation mode on, like, you're just fishtailing all over the place and doing donuts, and it's the fucking best. But despite the fact that I like that sort of stuff, and I really do like a lot of the stuff in the way, my schedule means that, like, I do wish I could just get to the story stuff more quickly, because a lot of it is really good. I really love Lincoln Clay as a character. I really love all of the supporting cast so far. And if I was still in college, I would have beaten this game already and would have dumped dozens and dozens and dozens of hours into it. But because I am super busy, I'm at, like, 17 or 18, and I was at 15 at the beginning of the week. So it's not like I have a lot of time to push forward, unfortunately.
Yeah, it just makes me wonder if games like this, I mean, obviously, yes, there's the component of just the lack of time and, and sort of, you know, as you get older, you just can't kind of dig into things the way that you would like to. But it strikes this game, which I've not played yet, and I'm looking forward to starting once I'm finished with Gears of War 4. Is this game better because it's an open world, or would this game have been better or told its story better if it was a more streamlined, focused, linear experience in which, you know, think of a game like L.A. Noire, which feels like it had an open world, but it was really just like a big city that you were being funneled from one thing to the next. So you got this sense of scale and scope, but it didn't actually have to fill it with that much.
So I think the thing is, like, Mafia 2 tried that and got heat for it because they weren't Rockstar, you know, and because Mafia 2 was a cool game, but I think it went against a lot of expectations in some other ways. I do think this benefits from being an open world game. I do like just driving around. I do like some of the stuff that can occur because it's an open world game. So let me give you a quick example.
Okay.
One of the open world activities is that one of the metagame things, one of the simulation elements of this game, is that you're managing these three capos of your own, three people who are under you, the leader of the Haitian mob, the leader of the Italian mob, and the leader of the Irish mob, all report up to you. And you have to balance what you give them. Like, as you take over districts and take over rackets, you can say, okay, Vito, you're in charge of smuggling now. Okay, Cassandra, like, I'm going to put you in charge of gambling here. And you have to balance their loyalties, and you get perks and stuff from upgrading or from doing that, basically. And you can also keep their loyalty and give them upgrades by doing side missions for their own lieutenants. Like, lots of, like, oh, go out into the bayou and find a truck filled with weed and then drive it back in to park in your facility. So I was doing one of those, and, you know, that's obviously a part of the open world thing, is just like, oh, I'm going to go pick up this thing and then drive through the city and get back. But another thing that was happening was I had just taken over a major racket. And so the main bad guy, Don Corleone, it's not Don Corleone, Mr. Scarface, it's not Mr. Scarface. Oh my God, his name comes up constantly and I'm not going to remember it. His son's name is Georgie.
Okay.
Skeletta? No, Vito Skeletta is your buddy.
Keep going.
This is bad. I'm digging a hole here. Vinny Cara? No, that's not it. That's not That dude sends hit squads after you, and they're just in the open world.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
And so there was this moment where I'm driving this huge 18-wheeler filled with weed through city streets, and these hit squads descended on me. But I was, like, three blocks away from my HQ, from one of the, like, rackets I controlled. So I just, like, all right, I'm just going to floor it. I'm getting shot, and I'm, like, getting shot through the window. The game actually has a really good car combat system because you can lock on to targets from the car and, like, tab through them like it's TIE Fighter or something. And I slam the truck into the like, back of my warehouse shipment area, and the hit squad, like, rolls in right behind me, but it's my HQ, so it's filled with my dudes. And so it's like when Sonny gets caught in the toll booth in Godfather, and it's just like, oh, this is an ambush. Y'all didn't know. Y'all thought you were hitting me, but y'all are locked in here with me. Like, this is my space. And that stuff only happens because of the open world space, and, like, because I was able to just go from checkpoint to checkpoint in this zone, and it wasn't a scripted thing. I'm a pretty big believer in having systems-driven interactions like that, where, like, oh, right, the investment I made by doing this before paid off, and I get to feel like this badass leader because my people took care of the hit squad. I didn't have to lift a finger. So, like, yeah, I think that stuff works. I just think maybe there could be half as much to do in the open world, like half as many missions, or, like, kind of half as much side content between these really great cutscenes. You kind of get the documentary stuff, and you get the kind of just, like, the heads-on Link and Clay story at these big gameplay moments, whenever you take out a capo, whenever you go after one of the higher-ups in the chain. And I want to get those more often. And there's also just, like, character stuff that I wish had that treatment instead of the kind of two characters standing in a space talking without any cuts, without any, like, visualization around it.
Right.
But that's just games also. Like, I wish every game had the budget to just zero in on every character interaction so that it was all really good. So yeah, that's what I've been That's what I've been playing. It says here you touched some Dragon Quest Builders.
Yeah, that might be the best way to contextualize what I did was I turned it on and okay. I played maybe 15 minutes of it. But yeah, I'm curious to play more of Dragon Quest Builders because, you know, I've expressed in the past, I think we've talked about Minecraft and how I respect Minecraft, but was looking for a more directed experience and had a lot of people. I did not have Dragon Quest Builders on my radar. I've never really played a Dragon Quest game. It's not really sort of a JRPG franchise I've ever gotten into, so I've never really looked at the spinoffs either. But a lot of people were saying, look, if you're looking for a directed, quest-based Minecraft experience where you have things to do with tasks to do and sort of RPG elements, this is the game you want to play. And I've only played about half an hour, but it definitely seems like it's that. And I'm curious to play more to see how it pans out because it seems really interesting. But mm-hmm. with 30 minutes, I just don't have much to say about it. So hopefully I'll be able to expand upon that in the next week or so. But I'm curious to see more of it for sure.
Awesome. Well, let me know how it goes. I also want to dig into it maybe over the weekend. We'll see. So what's going on this week? Like normally I think... by the time I get to Friday, I have a pretty good idea of like, oh, this was the big story in games.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
There wasn't a whole lot. We're in sort of a quieter period before we hit a lot of really major games in late October, early November. You know, we've got Battlefield coming out in the next 2 weeks. We've got Titanfall in the next 2 weeks, and then Call of Duty will be in the next 3 or 4 weeks. I'm not sure the exact release date. So there's a lot going on, but news-wise, weirdly, probably what made less news than we expected was so both Oculus and Valve currently is having their dev days up in Seattle. They're showing off some of their sort of like prototype VR tech. They're having presentations that if you follow certain people on Twitter, like Rami Ismail of Lambier, he's been tweeting out bits and photos from what Vice Dev Days is like. You know,
can you explain
Valve
what
showing.
That is for people who don't necessarily know what...
It's a developer conference that Valve shows because Steam is essentially, it's big enough to be its own platform. I don't know if they fly people out or if developers just show up. I'm not sure of the exact framework of Valve Dev Days, but it's basically a conference where there are like, you know, panels, you know, people are, you know, hey, we've been on early access and here's what we've learned. And then Valve is showing off essentially their evolved version of touch controllers. You know, the ones they shipped with the Vive are totally fine, but they're kind of clunky and not very ergonomic. And they've got these brand new ones that look much more like Oculus touch controllers. And they're, you know, they kind of wrap around your hand. So Dev Days is going on. And just before that, Oculus had their own developer conference. And the interesting thing that people were kind of looking for there was, A, that they were going to announce a release date for their touch controllers, which are coming out in December. They're going to be $200. So it's not cheap, but they are... technically going to come out this year.
That's $200. That's $200 for two controllers, or $200.
Yes.
Per, okay.
No. Yeah. Oh God. yeah. I don't think they work with just one. I think you have to have a pair. Okay. I think sort of the meta thing that people were curious about was what was going to happen with Palmer Luckey. You know, one of the co-founders of Oculus, the face of the company, both before the Facebook acquisition and afterwards. You know, as we've talked about in this podcast, not that long ago, you know, he was kind of wrapped up in being involved in some shady and unnerving groups that were doing a lot of quiet work to kind of support Donald Trump's campaign, and he was kind of caught doing that through an article that was in the Daily Beast, I believe, was where that broke.
That's correct.
And anyway, people are just wondering, you know, is he going to come out? Is he going to address this? Are they going to try and hush some of the criticism? And as it turns out, Facebook has just disappeared Palmer Luckey. Gizmodo has been kind of following this pretty closely, trying to ask people at that conference, you know, where is Palmer Luckey? And like the line from a lot of people is just, I don't know. Or they're, you know, they Gizmodo tried to ask John Carmack, you know, what's going on with Palmer Luckey, and he just laughed and walked away.
Wow.
And it paint, you know, it sounds like oddly similar to, like, they're just trying to not address the story, which I'm not sure if that is the approach I would have thought to do. I mean, they're kind of a no-win scenario. You know, if you send Al Palmer Luckey to apologize, but he doesn't apologize for, you know, like, a lot of what people are upset about is that he supported Donald Trump, and they're more upset by the tactics he used.
Yeah.
Is he going to go out there and repudiate all of that? Like, how do I mean,
like,
I just,
it's like doubly bad because Trump keeps having worse and worse weeks. Like,
yeah,
like, you can't put him out front saying, like, I apologize now, because, like, no, dude, like, you backed a dude who did some shit, and it's a bad look to step out at all right now, I think.
You don't want to look like Paul Ryan, you know?
Yes.
That's not a boat
yes.
you want to be on.
Yes.
And so instead, they've just chosen to ignore the story entirely. They haven't put out anyone, you know, you would think there's other co-founders, other leaders in the company that might have been able to say, hey, you know, there was an, you know, at least to address it obliquely and say, we're focused on developers, we're focused on the platform, just mm-hmm. nothing. And they must just suspect that, you know, it's going to kind of float away. And if, you know, as most news cycles go, it probably will float away. But it will come. What they've done is made it so that the next time Palmer Luckey appears, then it's a story all over again, as opposed to Palmer Luckey getting in front of it and
yeah.
at least trying to show some sort of contrition. Even if you don't believe him, even if you think he's just being a bullshit artist, whatever he said, you know, in some ways that allows people to compartmentalize it. And now they've just ensured whenever Palmer Luckey does an interview, if you are any sort of legitimate journalist,
you're going to
ask. That's going to be the first question you ask.
Right, right. Definitely.
Bizarre.
There's the other thing that came up with Carmack this week. I just want to hit really brief, which was this at that event where he said that VR developers are coasting on novelty?
Yeah, I think it might have been in his keynote.
He actually
keynote.
Said we. He didn't say VR developer. That is an important distinction because it's like, you know, you self-incriminate a little bit. That's a qualifier. It makes it clear that you're not necessarily, like, dissing other people so much as encouraging others and yourself to do better. He says,
yeah.
We are coasting on novelty and the initial wonder of being something people have never seen before, but we need to start judging ourselves, not on a curve, but in an absolute sense. Can you do something in VR that has the same value or more value than what these other non-VR things have done? And, like, good question. I am waiting to see that too. I mean, I think there's been stuff here that is like a little bit better than or not better, but it distinguishes itself. I think that, like, again, the stuff that I've had a really great time with Area X in Res Infinite, which is still great on PSVR, by the way, like that still runs really well for me. One of the things that Thumper also runs really well for me on PSVR, but then I tried Rigs and it caught me, man. It caught me again. So I think right now it's a hit or miss situation. Like, some PSVR games are a little bit harder for me to take than others. But I think stuff like Area X isn't working off of novelty necessarily. But I definitely appreciate that someone who has so much standing, I guess, in this space is saying, yo, we have to do better. And it isn't just backpatting. Because, like, that's the thing that turns me off from VR so much is the sort of, like, we are revolutionizing everything. We are changing the world. That sort of, like, rah-rah, look at the great shit we've done is, like, the worst thing to on my ears. And so anytime I can hear someone who's actually in the space creating shit being like, yo, let's do better, my ears are going to perk up.
Well, and, you know, I think you can easily point to in the last 10 years motion controls as something mm-hmm. that got wrapped up in novelty. You know, I think, you know, Wii Sports was revelatory and probably to this day stands as the one and best
yep.
Execution of motion controls. Not that there weren't other great games that used motion controls, but there was an elegant and a genius of the simplicity of Wii Sports that really there were maybe only a handful of games that ever got anywhere close to that. And I think that was part of what doomed motion controls. Not that, you know, we're kind of seeing motion controls kind of come back with VR mm-hmm. and there being a better integration of that idea. But I think you can look at that history of the Wii and the Kinect and the Move of novelty only gets you so far unless you find better applications for it. And so VR is in that space where the novelty can be forgiven, but it's smart for someone like Carmack to be saying we need to be thinking further ahead of what does this actually meaningfully mean beyond you can swing a golf Yeah. You know, like you can swing and hit a golf ball, and you can, you know, hit a baseball, and you can shoot bullets. Like, what are the things that actually take this a step further? And, you know, I think part of the problem there is that it needs time to develop. You know, we're in the launch period for a lot of these games. And, it, you know, if we take that in the context of previous launch periods, most launch games suck. And it takes, you know, 2 years before you start seeing the fruits of labor like that. And that's also compounded by the fact that this is all pretty brand new for a lot of people. So the language of VR is extremely new. The language of VR combined with controllers is extremely new. So it's not an easy question to answer, but it's at least nice to have someone that could just be rah-rahing VR, like, you know, Oculus, you know, working with Facebook. They could just be saying, you know, all the great things they're doing. To show a little contrition over bringing people down to reality is probably healthy.
Totally.
It's just a matter of what exactly that turns into.
I'm curious, you know, people who are listening, if you picked up PSVR, like, get at us on Twitter. Let us know how that's going for you. I am really legitimately curious. Speaking of gimmicky stuff and novelty and how those things have no value, Patrick, give me a number from 1 to 34.
Okay.
We are going back to the question bucket, baby.
Okay. I have felt like I've had a cold for, let's see, it started late Friday night. Does Friday night still count? Oh, we're going to go with 6. We're going to say 6
All
days
right.
where I've not felt great.
All right. Noel, or Noel, I do not know, from Austin, Texas, says, how do you decide, and I think that they mean as journalists here, how do you decide
okay.
how much emphasis to put into concerns that don't really seem to affect anything outside the gaming industry? Things like the Palmer Luckey story. Nice. Nice. Good. Things like the Palmer Luckey story or concerns about minority or gender representation in games seem like big issues because I pay attention to them. But I have no doubt that no one I know or work with, even those people who do play video games, has any idea what that those events are happening. Do we risk distorting view of what's important by spending so much energy focusing on these tiny storms in a small corner of a medium-sized teacup? Patrick.
No. I think part of being part of ourselves being journalists, or if someone like yourself, Noel, is that you're part of that insular community. Mm-hmm. You care on a micro level that is different than the macro level that the vast majority of the video game playing audience, the audience that sort of funds the ability for all of us to care this much about this medium. It's fine if they don't care, but I think there's a ripple
yes.
effect, right?
Yes,
so
exactly.
By us having this conversation, by us discussing these things, by the people that are this passionate and care this much about the medium of video games, the conclusions that we draw, the conversations we have, ripple out and I think end up appreciating,
yes.
you know, the medium of video games in a way that those people benefit from, in a way that they don't have to engage with it on that level. But I think you would ask, if you asked most of those people, or if you asked some of those people, if do they care that those conversations are happening, even if they're not participating? Yes, in the same way that I don't, you know, games are what I pay the closest attention to. I don't pay attention to other mediums nearly as closely because I just do not have the time. But am I hopeful that people are having those conversations? Am I my values, like the conversations I would want to have, are occurring in those places, and I'm gaining the benefits of smarter people, more in tune people having that.
I
think so, and I think that's how I feel.
You know,
about
I feel like I'm pretty much exactly in line with you, Patrick. Like, imagine a world in which I was not, in which I'd stayed in academia and was not writing about games for a living, and all I was doing was, you know, teaching and reading my marks or whatever I did as an academic. It would be dope when I played Mafia 3. It'd be like, whoa, they did this thing? Like, oh, I had no idea that this comes after years and years and years of ongoing conversations about race in games. And I'm not saying that conversation led in a direct factor to the creation of that game, but the fact that we were able to have those conversations is one of those things that if you're in the business of making games, you can look at those conversations and say, oh, okay, like, there is an audience for this that is interested in these questions and will pay money for it. And there will be critics who probably will respond well to it. And so having those conversations can help shape in a general indirect sense what's out there. I mean, it's the same thing that happened with, you know, again, it isn't just about social issues. It can even be about the design of something, right? Like, I think you look at something like The Witcher 3 and some of the design decisions in that game, like, those come as a response to the criticisms about open world games in general, the criticisms about The Witcher 2, criticisms about BioWare's open world games, and that ends up producing or leading to the creation of something, of a game that people who don't have a clue about those conversations can benefit from. You know, kind of to what you said, Patrick, like, we are the experts in this space who should be having these conversations. And I guess, like, the other thing, Noel or Noel, is that, like, I don't know that we are spending, like, an outsized amount of attention on those things. I think it can feel that way, especially if you're one of those people who is, like, exhausted by having the same conversations over and over and over again about things like representation or the things about basic game design. Like, how many times do we have to have the microtransactions conversation? Apparently indefinitely forever. Like, we've had VR talks every week. But, like, you know, you build a wall by putting a bunch of bricks into it. And at the end of the day, like, everybody benefits from that wall, not just the bricklayers. Like, we happen to be the people putting those bricks down. And we have to hope that we're putting them in the right place and that the mortar is right and that it can be exhausting sometimes. But bit by bit, you're building something really fucking cool. And so that's kind of my perspective on it. Like, I don't know that we spend too much time on any one given thing necessarily. I think different critics and different journalists have their different levels of expertise and different interests. Like, you and I don't talk that often about retro games, but I am super glad that people like Jeremy Parrish are out there, like, and Chris Kohler and Bob Mackey, and, like, there's a billion people in that space who are doing dope shit with I just want to keep naming names, like, people, Frank Safat, like, I just want to keep naming names about, like, oh, these people are doing cool shit with retro games, like, and the people who we don't even know about, right? There's a game called, God, what is it called? Something Mizerna, Mizerna Falls, which is an old, like, game that's sort of like a Deadly Premonition, in that it had, like, this Twin Peaks inspiration, this sort of, like, American mystery magical realism thing going on, and it never came out in English. This is a game from, like, the PS1, and there's a person who did a playthrough of that game on YouTube, like a Let's Play of it, and translated it live. Like, the woman who's doing that is rad as shit. And, like, I don't need to be doing it to benefit from the fact that now that exists. And
yeah,
and
exactly.
Gaming in general. Like, someone's going to go watch that and then make a cool game where that was its inspiration. Like, we're all working in our own little teacups, but it's part of a bigger quilt that we're all producing, you know? So, you know, I don't know. I can be a downer sometimes, but when I sit back and I think about all of the cool shit that's happening in this space from top to bottom, from tip to toe, like, it is pretty damn good. I think that's a pretty positive note to wrap this one on, actually.
Yeah,
like,
let's not ruin this by talking anymore, and I feel like just we got it.
Put a bow on it. Let's keep doing cool shit. That's all I'm saying. Patrick, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Patrick Klupik. You can find my writing. You can find Austin's writing at vice.com/gaming.
Soon that'll change.
Where do they find you?
Stop it. Austin_Walker on Twitter. I think I'm Austin Walker Games on Facebook now. Austin Walker, facebook.com/AustinWalkerGames. I think.
Yeah, I made a fan page, I don't know, like a year ago, just because it seemed like a thing that I just to stamp. And I was actually, like, upset at myself because my, you know, the name that I have across pretty much every service is just my name,
right?
Like, Patrick Klupik. It's very easy. So if you're ever looking for my work or anything I'm saying, you can usually just copy and paste that and get away with it. The problem is, years and years ago, when Facebook allowed people to book shorter names for your own personal,
yes,
like, just your regular Facebook page, I did that one because I never even thought about the idea of having a Facebook fan page, but now there's no way to change it. So I was like, well, I took the easy one. So then I had to go to P. Klupik, which I don't feel good about. I don't feel good about that one.
We did it. We should have just said goodbye on that other thing. Now I'm thinking about P. Klupik, and that's bad.
It's bad.
That's not a good name.
That's like a login I used in the 90s for most things.
Oh. God.
But then Austin Walker Games is also
terrible.
Well,
I just realized I could put anything after my name. I could have been like, Austin Walker is dope. Facebook.com/AustinWalker is dope.
Austin Walker loves
right?
Max.
I could have done anything. And I instead, I made it look like this.
No, Pete Klupik and Austin Walker Games.
Follow us on
really...
Facebook, I guess. This is a weird thing. It's like, here's radical transparency. Let's like lift the curtain for a half a second. Like, our little corner of games is Twitter. Like, Twitter is where so many of the conversations we're engaged with are. But for the wider world, they don't give a fuck about Twitter. Like, everybody else is on Facebook. The numbers from Facebook are so much higher than you think they are if you're listening to this, probably. Like,
when we, you know, at Kotaku, it was, you know, you published an article and then you waited till you posted it on Facebook. And the way you would watch the numbers spike was just... I mean, it's, you know, a larger conversation we can't really get into, but it's also a scary thing because the amount of control that Facebook has, largely because media organizations have allowed it to happen, and also just because of just the natural progress of Facebook becoming this enormous platform, there is just so many people that read most of what they get because it comes through things they have liked on Facebook and things that are posted to those pages. And so in a lot of ways, we are... There's no way to avoid it. You have to engage with Facebook. So we made Facebook pages with terrible titles.
Pete Klepek, Austin Walker Games on Facebook. Patrick Klepek.
Name our podcast. Pete Klepek and Austin Walker Games present.
Vice's unnamed new gaming podcast. Good.
Oh, my God.
Thank you so much to Tim Barnes, who is our producer on this. Thanks so much to Mitch Racken, who is doing the audio engineering right now. Our outro song, our intro song, they're the same song. That song is Miss You by Bo N off of his EP Pale Machine. You can find more info on him at bo-en.info or at bo-en-yeah on Twitter. Thanks so much, everybody. We'll see you on Monday. Peace. But for the wider world, they don't give a fuck about Twitter.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.